You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to this Thursday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we talk about the Indiana Pacers 5 days a week. As always, I'm one of the hosts of the show, Tony East, with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8.9 seconds. And today, my very sniffly voice is going to talk about the game that just happened between the Dallas Mavericks and the Indiana Pacers, where the Pacers dropped a tight one thanks to a rough perimeter defensive fourth quarter. Then I want to look kind of at the Eastern Conference standings as one particular team struggles through this month, struggles through right now, and see how the Pacers could end up with home court but not the three seed. And then I'm going to talk about the Timberwolves game coming up tomorrow. Probably not in the order I just told you. But anyway, let's start with this Mavs game. So if you listened to the game previews me and Adam did, or that I did yesterday by myself, I said, all right, here's how you win. You stop Luka Doncic, and you win the game. The non-Doncic Mavericks scored 84. So if you hold Doncic to a reasonable number, you win. And they did not. Luka Doncic had 26 points on just 16 shots in this game. He had 10 rebounds and 7 assists. He did have 7 turnovers, two of those being just terrible passes that flew out of bounds to nobody, but the Pacers could not stop him at all. He was bombing away from like 35 feet in the fourth quarter especially. He was driving to the rim pretty well, hitting his signature step-back jumper. He was diamond guys up, hence 7 assists, 10 rebounds, let him push in transition. The Pacers had no answer. They had Wes Matthews on him for a while. That solution looked pretty good, but it wasn't perfect. And then Wes had to play 37 minutes because he was the only guy who, well, and Tyreek was out, but he was the only guy who could really do a lot on him. They had Collison on him at times, but the size difference there was no match for him. Same with Corey Joseph, although Corey Joseph did better because he's just a better defender. So they just had no answer. And with no Tyreek to throw a fourth body at him and give some more effort, the Pacers guards all struggled to shoot the ball between Wes Matthews, Darren Collison, and Corey Joseph. We saw 27 shot attempts and only 10 makes, and most of those came via Wesley Matthews, who made 6 of those 10. So the guards did a lot to try to stop Doncic. They didn't do it, and they made them miss shots on their own, and that's the game. And in selling out to stop Doncic, Jalen Brunson had a nice game, 24 points on 9 of 14 shooting. If you've been around since we did NBA draft stuff here at Locked On Pacers, I wanted Jalen Brunson so bad. When they picked Holiday, I was disappointed because it wasn't Jalen Brunson. So this game was a nice victory lap for me, but I can't do that because his career is not over. But that was the game to me. Doncic played really well, and they won because the rest of the Mavs just did okay. Their only other two guys, I already named one of them, to shoot over 50% were Brunson and Dwight Powell, and Dwight Powell is 5 of 8. It's not like he was, like, so awesome. Jalen Brunson was pretty awesome, though. They contained the rest of the guys at least to a pretty good extreme. The thing for the Pacers is, like, you know, I think stopping Doncic is the key, but like if you want to look at them on the offensive end or box scores or whatever you want to do, looking back on this game, I don't think anyone played like Darren Collison played probably the worst game of anyone who played, but I don't think anyone played bad. You know, I think it's just like a culmination of everyone playing fine, and you need someone to step up in these kind of games, and no one did. Everybody just played fine. You know, Matthews had one hot stretch in the fourth quarter that kept him in it and kept his stat line looking good. And Bojan scored a lot, but he turned it over 4 times and got a crucially bad technical foul. Thaddeus Young was fine. Miles Turner was fine. Corey Joseph was fine and had to play a lot, so he couldn't give as much effort because Tyreek was out. Yeah, they just had a lot of fine, and they needed a good, and they didn't get anyone who was like blowing you away good, except TJ Leaf, who was 9.7 rebounds, 1 assist, no turnovers on 4-4 shooting. But if Leaf is the guy who's playing above expectation, you just lose, because him playing above expectation is at best a neutral player. He's still a net negative in the aggregate most of the time anyway. So they just didn't have anyone to really do the deed for them. Like I said, you know, Collison's been the clutch scorer for them. It was Matthews in this game. Collison came in at the end, did not help. He had more turnovers than made shots in this game. He did not look comfortable out on the court. Miles Turner did not have a fantastic game either. And the big man rotation in general was wonky because of Sabonis' injury. I already talked about how Tyrese affected them. Sabonis' injury inserted Kyle Quinn to the bench, and then he got a foul and then a flagrant and had three at the end of the first quarter. Barely played the rest of the game. And then they tried to play Turner more, and then Turner got into foul trouble. He had finished with five. Thankfully, he didn't foul out. But they had to go with Thad at center for a little bit, and it actually worked. I think Kalen Cooper said they won those minutes 15 to 11 on Twitter. I don't have that verified, but I trust her. I don't think she would spew nonsense without confirming. So they did well in those minutes. It works out against the Mavs, who did not play Salah Mejri, so that they didn't really have a backup center. Maxi Kleber, Dwight Powell, Dirk Nowitzki were their big men. All those guys are more of the four archetype than the five archetype, so this was kind of a funky game to have no Sabonis in that way, but they went with that at center for a little bit, and it actually worked out. But it did wear down Thad earlier than normal, which was unfortunate. But it's hard to walk away from a game like this where nobody played like poorly besides one guy and go, well, you know, that just fine is not enough. You can't beat... Like, the Mavericks in the East are probably the opposite of the record. They're probably 34 and 27, right? So they're like an okay. They're like a pesky 5 seed, a 6 seed like the Nets, you know? But they're in the West, so they're under 500. But then in this, like their talent is better than their record, and you can't just play fine against them. And the other storyline to me, the fourth quarter of this game, the Mavericks won it by 8, and they won the game by 9. The Mavericks had 31 points in the fourth. 24 of those points were off three-point shots. They just could not miss from the outside in the fourth. They made 8 threes. And it's not like the Pacers' perimeter defense was terrible. Like a lot of their things in this game, it was fine. But the Mavs were just creating okay looks and hitting them, and that was the game. They just couldn't match them. And if you remember the Pelicans game in New Orleans where Darren Collison was clutch, the Pels would like make a 4-5-0 run, and then the Pacers would score, and then another 4-5-0 run, and then the Pacers would hit a three. You know, they just kept stopping the momentum. That's exactly what the Mavs did in this game, and they held them off, and that's it. The Rick Carlisle Pacers games this year are over. It seems like the Pacers can never beat the Mavs. They got swept by them last year, and yeah, it was everyone was fine. That someone needs to be better than fine if they're gonna win going forward. 1-2 on the road trip, I thought they would do better. But it is what it is. You can only look forward, and that's what we're going to do. They play the Minnesota Timberwolves tonight. Let's take a look at the Minnesota Timberwolves. So stick around. So I want to give the Pacers a disadvantage because me and Adam got the time zone discussion. I lost that. I was wrong. The Pacers have a slight disadvantage because they're on a back-to-back coming over from the central time zone, whereas the Timberwolves are on a back-to-back, but they're coming from the eastern time zone. But the Timberwolves played the Hawks tonight, and they lost. I think they lost. I actually don't have that in front of me. The game went to overtime. I cannot confirm or deny the result of the game until I keep talking. They did lose. Okay, they lost in overtime, so they are going to be more tired because of the upped minutes. So I don't know necessarily that we can say, the rest advantage is really a thing here. But they are a one-man show now, so it's hard. They played already. The Timberwolves won back in late October, early November. I don't remember. But they still had Jimmy Butler then, and Jimmy Butler played, and the Wolves were good because they had a really good wing and Karl Anthony Towns on the same team. And that was a hard team to beat. And they had a different coach back then, too. They had Tom Thibodeau, and now they have Ryan Saunders. So hard to look at that game and say, well, we can draw these tangible comparisons to the game that will happen tonight. So unfortunately, I'm not going to even attempt to do that. But we can look at their Hawks game, see a bit of what the rotation looks like. Jeff Teague, I believe, is currently out with an injury. According to Basketball Reference, he is not, but he did not play in this game. Oh, there he is. Excuse me. Yes, he is. He has left knee soreness, and if he didn't play in the first game of back-to-back, I doubt he'll play in the second, but you never know. Same with Robert Covington, also not playing. So they have Tyus Jones starting at point guard, rookie Josh Okogie starting at shooting guard, Andrew Wiggins, you all know about Andrew Wiggins, at the three. Dario Saric starts for them at the four, acquired in the Jimmy Butler trade, and then the guy that's going to make this game challenging, Karl Anthony Towns, starts at center. With a bench of Derrick Rose, Anthony Tolliver, Jared Bayless, Lou Aldang, Taj Gibson in this game against Atlanta, with low minutes for Lou Aldang and Kata Bates-Diop. Since it was an overtime game, I'm sure they sprinkled in minutes for those guys. But yeah, it's just kind of a mix and match, hobbled injury group, and they're doing okay. They're an okay team. They're basically a 500 basketball team. They're kind of sort of knocking on the door of the playoffs. Although I mean, Towns would have to go scorched earth for the better half of March for them to make it. But it's not impossible. Karl Anthony Towns is a really good basketball player. I think he's one of the most overlooked players in the league this year, if we're being honest. 23.3 points, 12.2 rebounds per game on almost 50-40-90 splits. 52-39-84 splits. So, very efficient player who's very good at basketball in general. He could score inside and out. He's an all right defender when he puts his mind to it. Who knows if he will on a back-to-back. But he is the guy that is going to be challenging. Guys like that give Turner fits. I mean, guys like that really give everybody fits. But, Turner's going to play for the Pacers, so I'll single him out. Guys like him give Turner fits. And I anticipate that will be the case in this one. But without Covington and Jeff Teague, they're limited in other areas that should allow the Pacers to succeed. For example, Andrew Wiggins, kind of one-dimensional. His defense has not materialized perfectly in the NBA just yet. Dario Saric's defense has never materialized. Josh Okogie's defense is very good, far ahead of his offense, but he's not a hard matchup to stop. You could probably hide Darren Collison on him and put Wesley Matthews on the point guard. Tyus Jones, who's a fine player, shown some potential as a young guy. Their better point guard statistically this year comes off the bench, Derrick Rose. That'll be Corey Joseph's assignment. But matchup for matchup, really, I like what the Pacers have outside of the Towns matchup, so that's probably the focus, and I mean, that seems obvious, but this is a like Doncic situation to me. There are some teams, like the Bucks, where it's like, you can throw everything at Giannis, and he's still going to score 28 and other stuff, you know? What Thad did to him in December was unbelievable. But what happened earlier this month is what I think is more commiserate with how trying to slow down Giannis really goes. I think against the Bucks, the strategy is don't let anyone else kill you. You know, keep Chris Middleton from going off, keep Eric Bledsoe from going off. Let Giannis do his thing. Stop everybody else. Against the Timberwolves, man, if I'm sniffling this much, this podcast is going to be terrible. I'm so sorry. Against the Timberwolves, the opposite to me is the case, because if you shut down Towns, I don't think any of the other guys are good enough to really like get a rhythm and kill you. Wiggins maybe, but the only team he consistently kills is the Oklahoma City Thunder. I just don't worry about that super much. So slow down Towns. It's like the Doncic strategy, and make other people beat you. I don't think anybody outside of Wiggins can create for themselves at a very reliable level in the starting five. Off the bench, Derrick Rose, having a very resurgent season. He's at 18.4 points per game on also very efficient 48-39-86 splits. He's done a very, very good job for them. He's going to get paid a nice amount of money this summer because, A, his name is Derrick Rose, and, B, he's having a good season playing basketball. Defending him is hard because he's very, very good at attacking the basket. He's quick and slippery. He is the leader of the second unit. I don't know what the Pacers' plan should be. Corey Joseph can handle these kind of guys, but without, Sabonis to slow the game down and make it 5-on-5, you could have more misses that allow Rose to run in transition. That worries me a bit, especially given how the Pacers bench unit went today. They actually were net even in the Doncic minutes. I know Doncic went off, but they were a plus minus of zero in those minutes. They need similar, but that means, I'm sorry, that all that plus minus of Doncic, say the bench lost their minutes, and that can't happen against the Timberwolves and Derrick Rose. You gotta win those minutes so you can be ready when Towns is on the court. Some notable things for the Timberwolves. They're third in the league in offensive rebounds per game. A lot of that is on Towns. They get to the line a lot. They have a good free throw percentage, but they never turn it over. They're fourth lowest in turnovers. And then they limit steals. Same strategy. They're first in the league. Opponents get the few steals, so they take care of the ball. So you have to beat them 5-on-5, basically. The transition isn't there as much. But their defense isn't super awesome in any particular area. For example, they give up 37% on threes. They're not particularly deft, is that a word? I don't know why that just came into my head. I'll go with it. Good, deft, at closing out. So we'll see how they can defend the Pacers from beyond the arc, who have some good shooters. I think the Pacers need this win after these last two games just to get back on track, you know, prove they can win in this Sabonis-less era. Who knows how long he'll be out for. Hopefully Tyreke can come back and give them what they need. He would be actually quite helpful in this game because they have some bigger guards. Like, Jared Bayless is pretty big. So bigger guards need Tyreke Evans. We'll see what happens in this game. I think the Pacers can win, but I thought they could beat the Mavs too. I think my official quote was they're going to win two of the three games they had the rest of the week. So the Mavs as loss is the one. There it is. They're going to win the next two because I said it. So, yeah, be on the lookout for stopping Towns and slowing down Derrick Rose and hoping everybody else just has an okay game. One more short segment here to close this out. Just going to give you a cursory glance at the standings and see where the Pacers could end up. So stick around for one more segment, and then we'll be done here. Okay. I don't know if I want to call this segment the 3-seed segment or the 4-seed segment. The optimistic person in me wants to say it's the 3-seed segment. The Pacers have played one more game than the 76ers, and they won that one extra game. So they're 40-22, while the Sixers are 39-22. Meanwhile, the Sixers currently have the tiebreaker over the Pacers with one game to go. So in theory, if the Sixers play that extra game and win it, they're the 3-seed. So I'm going to effectively say the Pacers are the 4. They're not, because they've won another extra game over the 76ers. But, you know, the tiebreaker means that it's closer than a half. I don't know. They're essentially tied right now, right? So the Celtics have lost 4 in a row and are now 3 games behind the Pacers. They're 37-25. So they have played 62 as well as the Pacers. So what that means is the Pacers do have a tough run from the 7th to the 29th. Say they win 8 more games. That means the Celtics have to go 500 the rest of the way. I think the Boston Celtics can go 500 the rest of the way. They're about a 60-win team. So for me, for the Pacers to clinch home court, because I feel like the Celtics will win 12 or 13 and get to about 50, I think the Pacers need to win 10 of their final 22 games. And these last two games, these close losses to the Pistons and Mavericks would have been huge in helping them get to that point. I don't know how easy or hard it's going to be, but every Celtics loss the rest of the way makes it a lot closer because that gap is so small. And no one, neither the Sixers nor the Celtics, want to play each other in the first round. They will do whatever it takes to get out of this matchup against each other, whatever that may be. But yeah, I think that gap is somewhat, it feels large because the Celtics have lost 4 in a row and they're internally crumbling. They all kind of hate each other. I'm going to take a look at their schedule while I'm talking right now. See if they have any adversity coming up in terms of games. They got the Rockets coming up. They got at Golden State, at Lakers, at Clippers, they have a West Coast road trip coming up. So maybe after that we'll have a better pulse of what the Pacers really need to do. They do have quite a few tough games, actually. At Sixers, at Hornets, they got the Spurs. There's the Pacers. Look at that. They have some tough games. They have less tough games than the Pacers, obviously. I don't think anyone has as tough a march as the Pacers. But they can win 13 of those. So you got to win at least 10 and beat them to keep the tiebreaker even. Losing that game means you got to win an extra one, of course. So if they can beat the Sixers, first of all, to keep that tiebreaker tied, that'd be huge because the Pacers are not winning their division, right? And that would be the tiebreaker. So I don't think the Sixers are catching the Raptors anyway, but if they can go 2-2, that'd be huge. Same with the Celtics for the exact same reasons. So yeah, those gaps are close. Every game is huge the rest of the way. Meanwhile, the 6-seed Nets, who've played 63, are 8.5 behind the Pacers, which means if the Pacers win 5 out of their last 22, the Nets would have to go 13-9, and they barely are over 500. So I am very skeptical that the Pacers fall to 6. It gets increasingly unlikely. They're 10 games ahead of the Detroit Pistons, which means the Pistons would have to, if the Pistons win 12 the rest of the way out of their, they've only played 60 out of their 22. So if they go 12-10 and they're under 500 right now, they'll have one more win. If the Pacers lose every game, then the Pacers will fall behind the Pistons. But I am skeptical of that. Last note on the East standings. The entire Southwest division, so Hornets, Magic, Heat, Wizards, Hawks, is 8-12 in the East. So the winner of that division will be granted the eighth seed in the Eastern Conference playoffs, which I think is hilarious. Shout out to Wheat Hotchkiss for tweeting that out, that the current leader of the Southwest Division, thanks to a magic loss tonight, is the Charlotte Hornets at 28-33. They're going to get to hang a banner. Someone might hang a division championship banner with an under 500 record. What a joke. But anyway, the more important stuff is the Celtics record, basically. Can the Pacers hold it off and get a home court series? You know, that matters a lot. If you know, that they don't have Vic, they need all the advantages they can get. Home court would just be another one. So we're going to keep an eye on the Celtics record the rest of the way. It's going to be fun. Maybe we'll hit up the Lockdown Celtics guys and see what we can pry to them. But thank you guys for tuning in to this episode of the Lockdown Pacers podcast. Adam will be on tomorrow, I think, to talk Timberwolves and look ahead of the weekend. So stay tuned for that and have a great rest of your day.